Are you listening? Damn.
And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast. This is episode 359. Alongside Coach Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Glad to have you with us again this week. Lots of great questions, lots of great topics. We begin today with Tanya. First of all, thank you so much for the awesome plans you have provided on Training Peaks. I have purchased the Couch to Ironman plan, but I've been dragging my heels on starting the training. I signed up for Ironman Arizona, so hopefully, Tanya, I'll see you there. I'm wondering if it's bad an idea to jump into your plan now when there's about 25 weeks left. I would love some guidance, and here's the backstory. She's 46. She's completed one Ironman. She said it was kind of slow. It was Mont Tremblant in 2019, so a few years ago. I really haven't done much training since. Am I too late to jump into training plan right now for Arizona being 6 months away? Coach.
Tanya, what a great question. I'm sure many of you out there who are listening have had that question either now or in the past. I know I have myself with my own experience. So a little bit more background, our Couch to Ironman program is available on Training Peaks. It's 32 weeks long, and it was created based on a conversation that I had with an athlete who sought me out to talk about his first time triathlon experience, which happened to be an Ironman. That was his very first triathlon. And he did it, I recall he did it in about 8 months. And so it got my mind thinking, if this guy did an Ironman distance race as his very first triathlon, based on his experience, I wonder how many more people are out there that do that, and there are. So we created this plan. And to follow up also, you know, the question athletes ask are always, it depends on their experience and their current level of fitness and their time available to train. So I did follow up with Tanya and got a few more answers to my questions I had with her to kind of give her the best feedback I could and the best guidance. Now her goal of Ironman Arizona mainly is because it was a deferral. And she had said, you know, that's not right now a very strong why of doing it, but she doesn't want to lose out on the money because she paid the money a few years ago and it's deferred and she's finally able to do it in 2022. Now also, you know, her goal of doing Arizona is so she could finish an Ironman faster than she did in Mont Tremblant. Finishing Mont Tremblant is a great experience because that's a really tough course. So kudos to Tanya for doing her first Ironman on such a tough bike and run course. I consider it tough because it's hilly. And so I encouraged her and told her, you know, by default of Ironman Arizona being flatter, that gives her a lot more chances of finishing Ironman Arizona faster than Mont Tremblant as a hilly course. So that was encouraging. And then because she has experience training for an Ironman, she knows what it takes. And so she has a little bit of knowledge from previous experience to know what it takes. And so after all said and done, I encouraged her to start the plan on week 25, making sure when she loaded the plan that it ends on the Ironman Arizona race date. And she just jumps into the program while also looking back at the first 6 weeks. Because the first 6 weeks, you know, Dave and I have provided a lot of coaching content in there. And so I wanted to make sure she was up to date on the terminology, the goals of the phase of training. And in her case, the second 6 weeks of the plan are very similar to the first 6 weeks of the plan, a little bit of progression with volume, but we don't necessarily go into much intensity or much more frequency. It's a 32-week plan, so the first 12 weeks are all about developing frequency and volume. So, you know, she was really happy with that, and she thought, based on week 25, she was ready to jump in the plan with that volume. I believe was about maybe an hour run as her longest run and an hour and a half ride at this point. And so she felt comfortable doing it. And I said, you know, always listen to your body, adapt the plan around her life schedule. And if she's feeling like any signs of physical, you know, more physical fatigue, you know, just to back down and instead of doing an hour and a half ride, maybe just do an hour ride and, you know, just back down the volume a little bit, couple, you know, an hour or two a week and then keep a training log was so important for our conversation, is to log how she's feeling, to log any modifications she's making. And, you know, I welcomed her to reach out to me if she had other questions as she got into the plan.
So couch to Ironman, how is that different from people who see the other plans on our page that say something similar to couch or beginner Ironman plan?
So the beginner Ironman plan is shorter. That's 24 weeks. Okay. It's either 20 to 24 weeks. I don't have them in front of me. And so it's a shorter plan. A beginner Ironman, and we are very detailed on what we do, how we describe a beginner. And we talk in a video about when you start this plan as a beginner, you should be able to do this certain volume the first week. And when you start the couch to Ironman, it's a different volume that you'll need to, it's a lower volume that you'll need to start the first week. And so, you know, it's up to each athlete to determine, you know, self-assess where they're at. The couch to Ironman doesn't necessarily mean you literally are coming off the couch with absolutely no fitness background ever. Some people will be, but others won't. A lot of times people who do the couch to Ironman, they like it because it's longer mm-hmm. than the beginner plan. And, you know, they've used to do triathlon, but they've had a few years off and they just want to progress a little bit slower with frequency, volume, and intensity.
Personally, for you, since we're talking about the duration or training weeks, do you like something that's shorter or do you like something that gives you a lot more time to build into it? I know you might not be the best person to ask because your fitness level is always at a high level because you're always doing something, whether it's ultras or triathlon training. But do you prefer a longer lead up or do you just want to get into some more, you know, maybe something like a 12 weeker or eight before like a half or maybe 12 to 16 for a full?
Again, that's such a subjective question. As an athlete myself, you know, when I train the last 2 years, I've specifically spent my winter and spring trail running. Mm-hmm. And when I complete my spring event, I'm like ready to be done. I'm like, okay, that's done. It's over. I'm ready to move on to a different training, which would be triathlon for the last 2 years. And then I get all excited. You know, I'm back on my bike. I'm doing less volume of running and I'm more multi-sport and I enjoy that. I enjoy that a lot. And now 8 weeks into specifically focus on triathlon for this season, I'm starting to miss trail running. I'm kind of like, oh, I'm ready to kind of go back and incorporate some trail running into my plan. I, you know, again, and because I always hold a level of fitness of base that if I see an event, I give myself another 8 to 12 weeks to specifically focus on that event. Maybe it's a 10K, maybe it's an Ironman. Mm-hmm. And then I switch gears. So I can easily switch gears in my training to adapt to the conditions and the fitness that I want to see for an event. And I also have always been a little bit more random in my training, where I don't really have a set day-to-day plan. I more or less have a weekly, what do I want to get in this week? And I'm able to adapt it to my schedule to say, okay, I have a little more time on a Wednesday to do that 3-hour ride. I'm going to get it done today because I have a swim in on the weekend and I'll be getting in 30 minutes workouts on the weekend. So mm-hmm. I'm, you know, just due to my experience and doing it for so long, I can adapt it easily. I think for most athletes, for an Ironman, 6 months is generally the guideline to specifically say, okay, this next 6 months is focused on adapting my body for the fitness I need to do an Ironman. Mm-hmm. But the more beginner an athlete is, the more less confident an athlete has. I think it's better to have a longer 9-12 couple years experience before they jump into a distance like an Ironman. Yeah, does that answer your question?
A little bit, yeah. I think maybe that if a person is adding some races throughout their season leading up to that big race, if it is 12 or 9 months away, they can build their confidence with race experience or at least the routine experience. And then you're building fitness upon fitness to when it is time to really focus. If it is a 6 month build, focus on, all right, now I realize and recognize and appreciate why I'm doing what I'm doing and how it's going to help me, you know, 6 months from now, because I've seen some of the benefits or some of the pitfalls of not training, or I'm doing everything right for these shorter races, the sprints, the Olympics, and maybe there's a half in there somewhere. So it's a big build throughout the year. And then you can go, all right, it all makes sense now. So I understand why I did what I did for those events. And when I see these plans that Wendy has created for me, it makes, there's a reason why this is here now for this long-term benefit.
Yeah. And I think it is a long-term benefit. And like I said, you know, I think jumping into an Ironman or some sort of ultra distance event as your very first event isn't the best route, only because, you know, it takes, everyone adapts to certain training load differently. But for me, it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Why rush into it? Especially the longer distances, why not say, okay, I'm going to have my first event be a 5K and then a 10K, then a half marathon and then a sprint and then an Olympic and then a half Ironman and then a marathon and then an Ironman, you know? So there's a way to take your time and make it a lifestyle. So you may enjoy it more, because I think the athletes who jump into an ultra event such as an Ironman as their very first event without having any experience following a training plan or how it's going to impact their job or family life may end up not enjoying it as much as I have. I've been doing this for 30 years, and that there's a reason I'm still doing it, because I've learned a lot, and I've adapted my training and my race schedule around my life schedule and what I want to do.
This question is not on our list today, but it kind of ties into what you're saying with people who maybe are first timers who take on the longer distances for their first race. This is a friend of mine who I think is bowing out of the 7.3 Coeur d'Alene, which is in 3.5 weeks. And I've been talking to him, and he did his first half Ironman a couple of years ago. It was Coeur d'Alene. And we kind of, you know, led up to it together. So I'm keeping track with him every week, kind of sharing my details every once in a while, but just saying, hey, how's your training going? He's working. He's kind of traveling. So he's not really where he wants to be. He's got a little bit of an injury in his shoulder, but he has potential. And that's why I kind of want to encourage him to stay with it. And so I asked him recently, it's not a big training weekend. This is actually a couple weeks ago. He goes, yeah, I know, not looking good. I go, what do you mean not looking good? Just can't do anything right now. If I can't train, it's going to be hard to do a try in a month. And then I'm saying, you know, it's all a matter of just rebalancing your expectations. That's what I wrote to him. Experience is your greatest teacher. Regardless of how you perform, you're going to learn something, I say. He goes, that's a tough pill to swallow. The goal is to do better than the first time. Just completing isn't an option. And he sees other people doing the race and completing it that aren't as fit as him. And he's kind of, I think there's some ego involved here.
Uh-huh.
So I replied back and forth a few more times, which I won't necessarily say, it's whatever. And then last week I said, 4 weeks to go. Are you in or you're out? He goes, not looking good. So I believe he's not in it. But the point of bringing all that up is his expectations of he has to do better his next race. He has to finish faster, has to do better than his first time. I'm going to stop, you know, I feel like I'm pouring water down a well with holes in it, or, you know, it's not a bucket with holes in it. He doesn't care. He doesn't think that by doing the race that it's worthwhile if he can't go better than he did beforehand. Do you ever experience athletes like this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Personally, not. Again, there's a reason I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm able to adapt my expectations based on the circumstances of life and how I've been able to prepare for certain events based on certain injuries I've experienced over the years. And so a lot of it is, you know, for me, primarily, I enjoy the process more than the races. And I'm fortunate that that's always been the case, even as an age group swimmer. When I used to compete as just a swimmer, I enjoyed the training so much more than stepping on the blocks and having to compete. Mm-hmm. And that's carried over into triathlon. I'm definitely more competitive. I have that more competitive drive as a triathlete than I did as an age group swimmer, collegiate swimmer. But still, the process is ultimately the most important. And, you know, when COVID happened in 2020 and races were canceled, that was like no big deal. I actually got in super, super fit shape that year. Even though races were canceled, I adapted and I did other things to stay motivated and to stay healthy and fit. And I'm glad I did, because it's carried over. It carried over into 2021, which is carrying over into 2022. And so you definitely do have to have the right why, mm-hmm. and the right attitude, and being vulnerable and being able to, you know, express your emotions and help and ask someone for guidance to help you manage what's going on so you can change your attitude if necessary to still complete the event. And yes, to answer your question, I do coach athletes who had certain expectations when they signed up for a race a year ago, and then, you know, things change. But it's still like, okay, you know, even though you didn't train like you expected, you can still finish, and you should still go and finish and still go and get that experience, because you might surprise yourself and do a lot better than you think you could at this time in your life.
I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy to go into something when you have expectations that you've done better before, and you know, most likely going in, that you won't perform like you did previously. To me, there's an ego, there's a pride involved, and there's the attitude of, you know, if I can't do better, I don't even want to do it. And I think it's a poor attitude. I mean, there's a maturation process of getting past that. And I've gone through it before, but I have found small victories or small goals within the race, knowing that, all right, it's not going to be what it was, but where can I find these whys or these successes? Where can I get better? If I'm not going to be a good swimmer this time around, accept it, which is swallow your pride, swallow the big pill. But I can do better at bike. Maybe I'll make the bike the effort that I want to, you know, overachieve from the previous event. Or maybe I'm going to test. Maybe I'm going to gather data. And I think that's something that is hard to accept. Like, I'm going into the race, my bike fitness is not there, or I've got a running issue. The run's going to suck. I may walk it, but I'm okay on the bike fitness. Let me get some data for later so I know what happens. If I had issues with cramping, can I go at a certain power range? What happens if I go beyond that power range? How am I going to react? Let me watch my heart rate data from the day. Can I replicate that? Great. If not, this is a good test. I'm drawing something from it. And I think it just comes with time. And for him, being his second one, and both would have been half Ironmans, he doesn't understand or appreciate what the sport is. And like you said, it's the process, the preparation's more fun, and what you should look for, not just the destination.
Yeah, absolutely. And things could go the opposite. You could be super fit and just so like pumped. Oh yeah, I'm going to crush based on my training. I know I'm going to crush my time from last year.
Yeah.
And then you get food poisoning the day before, or it rains or snows, or extremely high winds that slow you down and crush your soul on the bike or the run. And so nothing's ever a guarantee. Your finish is never a guarantee. You will not know how strong you are until you cross the finish line. You will not know how prepared or unprepared you are until you cross the finish line. And so every experience is a different experience. For me, I've never had any identical Ironman or 70.3 or sprint or Olympic. I've never had the same experience in any races I've ever done.
And most likely you never will, because you're aging, because the weather is different. I mean, you could have a mechanical, which you've experienced before. I've experienced before. It's like, well, there goes my plan. Right. What about plan B? All right, there goes plan B. You know, okay, what about plan C? Have some contingency plans in place and expectations that will follow based on plan A, plan B, plan C. Okay, it didn't go right. All right, well, then I fall back on what I thought B would be, and the expectations that would be associated with that plan.
Yep.
This question from Tia. I'm wondering if you have any advice on how to best deal with a blister. I've had it for a week. It's not healing, not scabbing up because of pool time, and it keeps getting wet and soggy. Any ideas, coach?
Well, my first thought is, when you do have a blister or some sort of like road rash, maybe you fall off your bike or running, you got some scabs. If you want it to heal faster, then you stay out of the water. So I totally know what she's experiencing. And one thing that I learned back in just a few years ago, I was visiting Colorado. I wiped out on my bike. I lost control of my bike due to the wind, and I hit a cone, and then I was on gravel, and then I was down. And I had some pretty gnarly road rash on my arm and my hip. And I didn't know I was alone. I didn't know how to deal with it. And so the next day I went to the Boulder Res, and my friends saw me. You know, I tried to cover it up, but I was in so much pain. They're like, what's wrong with you? And I showed them, and they're like, you got to get some Tagaderm. Mm-hmm. And that's just a special transparent bandage that oh my gosh, it's been a lifesaver for me, you know, over the years, is it just keeps the right amount of moisture in, and it's healing. So there's, you know, whatever ointment they have in it, whatever protection, cleansing, whatever is in it, it just helps heal it, and then it protects it from the water. So if you do have something like that and you do want to still swim, put some Tagoderm on it. I think that's just amazing stuff. It is, and it's super expensive, but it works for what you want it to work for. So that's what I followed up with her with.
It's like a new skin. Is something called new skin? I'm not sure if there is.
It's different than new skin, but it's probably like a new skin. And also, you know, just to prevent blisters, keep your feet dry. So if you're out there in the rain, she was on a hiking venture with heavy boots on, and it was probably moisture from her sweat, or maybe she was in, you know, some sort of high humidity area. The main thing to prevent blisters is keep your feet dry. So if you're going to be going into some ultra events, whether it's an ultra marathon or triathlon, always have spare socks and dry shoes handy, because that'll help prevent.
This question from Anne, it's about strength. When you say, coach, I believe everyone should implement strength, even just 10 minutes a day. Don't skip it. Does that mean strength should be done every day, coach?
Again, a great question. No, that's not, if I said strength needs to be done every day, I would say strength needs to be done every day. What I meant by that comment is, if you don't have time to complete, let's say a 30-minute strength workout, because you just, you know, let's say that's scheduled on a Monday and you just don't have time to do it, break it up. Do, you know, 10 minutes on Monday, do another 10 minutes on Tuesday, and then maybe another 10 minutes on Wednesday. Because if you break up your strength session into little pieces, just to try to get it all in the nature of the week or within a few days, it's going to benefit you. So don't just say, oh, I don't have time to do it, I'm not going to do it at all. Just adapt and manage what you do have time for and try to fit it in throughout the day. Maybe you wake up, maybe you have 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at noon, 10 minutes in the evening, that you can complete it all in one day. So it's just trying to encourage her and other people out there, is just, you know, even if you just do body weight stuff, squats, push-ups, planks, some hip hinges, some stretching, mobility stuff, you know, clamshells, glute bridges. It's all in the long run, with frequency builds consistency. It's all going to help you in the long run. So just do what you can do, but you don't have to do it every day.
In a lot of our programs, we incorporate strength training, whether it's for maintenance, whether it's just for supplemental things, and we've got links to video demonstrations. So if you see and hear some of these terms, like what's clamshell, what is it, you know, what's a hip hinge, or what's a Spider-Man or something like that, we have links to what it looks like and how it's demonstrated within our plans on Training Peaks. Just a quick FYI.
Yeah.
So on the heels of that question from Anne, I think this ties in perfectly. This from Gary: how much time between a cycling workout and a run workout before the run no longer counts as a brick workout? So you've got scheduled bike run and you're going, okay, good, I got to transition, I got to put my shoes on, I got to take my stuff off. All right, 10 minutes, no problem. It does count as a brick. Just wondering if taking too long to get ready for the brick workouts defeats the purpose of a brick workout.
Well, again, another good question. And it also depends on the person and the length of your bike and the length of your run and the intensity of the bike and the intensity of the run. So the example I'm going to use happened to me yesterday. I went for a bike ride in an area I haven't ridden in a couple of years. And I did 40 miles at a fairly moderate, some intense efforts, packed my bike up, got in the car, drove 20 minutes. And I wanted to go run on this trail because it was Global Running Day, and I wanted to run on my favorite trail. So getting out of the car, spending 20 minutes in the car and getting out and starting to run, I felt more exhausted during that run because of just the sitting in the car and just the time between it than I would have if I just ran 2 miles right away. So I still got the benefit of running on tired legs, which is the reason we do brick workouts, also called transition workouts, T runs. I still got a benefit of running on fatigued legs, yet I couldn't run at the intensity I would have if I ran immediately after I packed my bike in my car. I would have been able to run stronger at probably an easier effort than I did on the trail. And so you just want to take into account, again, duration and volume of what you're trying to accomplish. If you don't have time to run immediately after the bike and you end up running later in the day, you're still kind of getting a little bit of benefit of running on more fatigued legs than if you would have ran earlier before the ride. Yet at the same time, you know, maybe during that period of time, you fueled a certain way. You had lunch, you had a snack, you know, so your fueling's differently. So you might actually run better later in the day. But still, the concept of running on tired legs is still there. So again, the importance of the brick workout is to try to run as quickly as you can after you're done biking. I'm not going to say there's an actual time, you know, I don't know scientifically if there's a certain time that defeats the purpose, other than the purpose is to run on tired legs. Mm-hmm. So get it in when you can. Just like strength training, if you can't do it right away, do it when you can.
Is there a difference by definition or by a training philosophy or plan of having a recovery run versus a transition run? So like, you know, you had a hard workout on Thursday, and in the plan that you have on Training Peaks, the next day it says, all right, this is a recovery day. We're going to do something mm-hmm. a little lighter and easier just so it's not right. as much pounding. Is that the same thing, or is that just by definition, it is a different type of workout?
That's by definition a different type of workout. And that just reminded me. So I've coached athletes who this one particular athlete just lacks running off the bike, you know, just due to whatever happens, she something always happens that she never gets that transition or brick run in after her bike. And so sometimes in Training Peaks, the next day she'll go for a run and she'll comment that the run is, she's making up the run from Tuesday. Mm. And I said, no, that's a different run. The run on Tuesday was supposed to be a transition run. It was meant to be run off the bike. It's going to give you a different adaptation. It's going to feel differently than if you ran the next day. There's nothing wrong with running the next day. It's just not the brick run. I mean, it's not the same type of run. It's just a different aerobic endurance run that you happen to run 24 hours later.
Got it. Again, this is going to tie into that question in a way. This from Jeremy. I am following your Couch to Olympic program, again, from Training Peaks, and you say, run with good form. What is good form, Coach?
Another subjective word, good. Yeah. So when I'm thinking of running with good form, first I want to start off, if you haven't already, you can send me a run form video for analysis, and I can help you pick apart your running style and tell you what I consider what's good and what's bad. And when I'm considering what's good and what's bad, I'm trying to make you a better runner so you're running with less effort, doing various skills and drills to implement good technique so running feels easier, you're going faster, and you're using less effort. So generally, good form has to do with, number one, your foot strike. Where you're striking the ground, is your leg straight and you're striking out in front of your hips, then that usually indicates that you're probably also a heel striker, and that's going to put some impact on your hips, shins, and knees. So a good form would be having the athlete lean forward and making sure that they're landing underneath their center of gravity, which is their hips. So that's one of the main things I'm looking at. Number two, I'm looking at your cadence and your stride. I like to encourage athletes always have room to pick up their run cadence. That's the number of foot strikes they take per minute. And they should be able to do that at any speed. You don't necessarily always need to run fast to increase your run cadence. It's a matter of leaning forward, popping your heel up, and landing directly underneath your center of mass. And so cadence and stride. Once you have a quick cadence, then you work on strengthening your legs, and that's going to help increase your stride. And then I had already mentioned like a forward lean, making sure you're leaning forward from your ankles, which is a hard concept that I had to get adjusted to when I was learning how to run, but leaning forward from your ankles and not leaning forward from your waist. And always have, you know, really good posture. Pretend there's a string pulling up on your head and your shoulders are stacked over your hips, are stacked over your knees, are stacked over your ankles, and a good arm swing. Mm-hmm. that your arm, you have the 90 degree angle between your wrist, your elbow, and your shoulder, and you're pulling back. Mm-hmm. You're not like robot arms and pushing your hands forward. You're trying to pull your elbow back behind you. And of course, you're not crossing the center line and yada, yada, yada. But those are the basic things when I'm thinking of good running form.
These are super helpful. I visualize these things in my head on some of my runs recently because my runs are kind of boring. I have this one route that's almost back and forth. It's a half mile left, it's a half mile right, and then I can find another quarter mile that's somewhat flat. But I'm going back and forth, but I think about these foot strikes, these leans, and it helps the time go by sometimes when I think about form, whether it's bringing my heel up or I recognize and I'm analyzing my body as I'm going, like, am I squeezing my hands too hard? My shoulders, are they shrugged up while I'm running? How can I relax? And when I do these things, I actually feel like I go a little bit faster because the form is correct. I think about where the foot is below the center of gravity of my body. There's a little bit of a lean. And I go, oh my gosh, if I just let my arms go a little bit less, they're too high, they're too tight, it seems to go by faster. So even just thinking about that can kind of kill some time while you're going through some of these long runs.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go out and run, even recovery runs or easy runs, aerobic runs, you know, make them purposeful and think about your form and your posture. So again, I kind of spit out a lot of good run form, but the main thing I want to focus on is the foot strike and the cadence. I mean, that's ultimately the first thing I always look at a runner. And then I'm looking at arm swing. And again, when you lean forward, that's going to change your cadence. When you change your arm position, that's also going to change your forward lean. So every little change that you make, just like in swimming, is going to change other aspects of your form.
I'm sure, I don't want to assume everything, but you know, there's the athletes that are listening to this show. If you have a certain type of smartwatch, it could be like, I'll say Garmin. The data is in there on your foot strikes. I look at it all the time of, okay, I'm at 169 foot strikes per minute. Uh-huh. My best was this, or I know where things are. I know what my cadence is. I know how long my foot was on the ground based on the data that it provides. It's like, this is so helpful if you want to go back and go, what am I doing? Why was that run faster? What was that mile split? How was that different in the previous mile? And just so many cool things that if you're data-driven that you can improve your performance.
Yeah.
It's obvious. This is on the tail end of that one. This is like, it's a perfectly produced show. It's about cadence. I was told cycling at a low cadence, 65 RPMs, hurts your knees have been avoiding low cadence drills you have scheduled. What is the purpose? I think there's a word missing here, but go ahead.
Okay, so context is everything. You know, if an athlete came to me and said, my knees are really sore, and I would say, okay, did you happen to run hills, uphill or downhill? Or did you happen to bike hills? And did you happen to be pushing big gear? And if they say yes, I'll tell them, well, if they say, yeah, you know, today during the workout, I was riding 60 to 65 RPMs, or out on the group ride, I kept my RPMs at 60 to 65. Then I'd say, yeah, that's probably the reason your knees hurt. But I want to say cycling at 60 to 65 RPMs does not equal hurt knees. And so, you know, for her to be told that cycling at low cadence is going to hurt your knees, it could hurt your knees if you already have bad knees. And more importantly, it's going to strengthen your quads, hamstrings, and glutes. And so the benefit of it is to mimic riding uphill. So it's a good thing to do indoors on your trainer because it's kind of going to mimic an uphill ride and really get your whole leg engaged in the pedal stroke, low cadence. And if you're doing it at, again, the proper power, which normally I like to have athletes doing it in their maybe 80 to 85% range or RPE 6 to 7, where they're really focused on their pedal stroke, they're focusing on that big gear as well as that number on the power meter or RPE scale, over time, you're going to get much stronger and then you're going to get much faster. Cycling, again, there's an efficient cadence, just like there is for running and swimming. When you have if you're riding at 80 RPMs, the way you're going to go faster in cycling is to push a bigger gear. If you can push a bigger gear at 80 RPMs, you're going to go faster. So riding at 65 RPMs doesn't mean you're going to get faster. It's just going to make the ability to push big and small gears that much easier. Also, varying your cadence, especially like when you're riding indoors and you don't have the varying terrain to manage, you're going to be, you know, the next time you go out and do hill repeats, think about what your cadence is up that hill. It's probably going to be similar to what you were doing riding indoors and you weren't even thinking about it and your knees didn't hurt. Mm-hmm. And just think about the last time you maybe did a race, what the nature of the terrain was and kind of how much or how little you changed the gears on your bike. And so it's just a good way to, again, mainly I'm going to emphasize the leg strength.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, and also another thing is if your knees do hurt pretty frequently from pushing big gears on the bike, it could be an imbalance of your quad and hamstring strength. So something to be aware of and something to look into. I just want to stress that just because you're doing big gear drills doesn't mean you're going to have weak knees. You're going to have an underlying issue.
With my power meter, which is a Quark power meter, I'm able to see which leg is working harder than the other one percentage-wise, like 53% versus 47%, left versus right, or vice versa. Do you have anything similar that you look at? Are you able to see maybe if it's even running, you know, which leg hits ground faster, right, or more, or anything like that?
I don't look at that data for myself. Okay. I'll look at that data if athletes have that data uploaded into their Training Peaks account. I look at that data, but I don't personally look at it. Hmm. I mean, I can feel it. Like, I know I have a leg length imbalance, and I can always feel, especially on the bike. If I were to guess, you know, if I were to see those percentages, I would know that my right leg would probably be, you know, 60 and my left leg would be 40. Hmm. You know, I just know that by feel. And so I don't analyze my own data.
Okay. Not in that way.
No, because I just do that for athletes I coach.
Gotcha. Well, that wraps up all the questions we have for this episode of 359. Anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
You know, it's June. It's summer. It's hot outside. Be safe. Wear sunscreen.
Yes.
Hydrate.
Yeah, I thought I put a little bit on, but I got a slight tan line from yesterday. Well worth it, but yeah, in my... You're talking about these transition runs. I had a long bike ride yesterday, and I went downstairs. I went walking downstairs, and I could feel my quads just, I said, oh, these are trashed. It was a good workout to where I know it would have been helpful to do something, probably a light run afterwards, but based on what I was doing, it wasn't, I was doing some other things.
Right.
It's like, maybe I should have just done a half mile or 10 minutes or something just to shake these out after a long run. But I did recognize what you mentioned about, because I drove, after the bike ride, I drove somewhere and I thought, my legs feel it, just stepping out of the car. But I would have been okay going for a run right immediately, but a half hour later, an hour later, it started to set in like, oh, there's the fatigue, there's the lactic acid, there's something that's like, oh, I wish I would have stretched these out a little bit better.
Yeah.
Well, that's it then. Episode 359. Thank you so much for listening to this this podcast today. If you have any questions, you can always contact us on social, Endurance Hour. You can always go to the T2 Endurance Club on Facebook and join us there and ask questions. Always welcome, and we'll see you next week. For Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. Until next time, adios.
Adios.